I'm Sarah Papert, and this is When I Got Here, Untold Immigrant Stories, a podcast from Literacy Achieves. At Literacy Achieves, we provide English literacy programs for immigrant and refugee families in Dallas, Texas. Our students come to us from all over the world. We celebrate them and what they bring to our country. When I Got Here tells the stories of immigrant journeys to the United States, why they left their homelands, and the lives they are making here.
I'm Byron Harris, and this is the story of Ruben and Elena Esquivel, who were forced to leave Cuba when they were teenagers, 60 years ago. Ruben and Elena's early lives were shaped by two dictators. First, Fulgencio Batista, the president of Cuba in the 1950s. He boosted the exploitation of his country by American corporate entertainment and gambling interests, and got rich in the process. The second dictator that shaped the Esquivel's lives was Fidel Castro. He led a band of revolutionaries who attacked an army barracks on July 26, 1953, signaling the start of the Cuban Revolution. For 5 years, Castro and his followers fought Batista and endured repression, torture, and murder by government forces. Batista suppressed democratic freedoms. He lost the confidence of the people and alienated public opinion across Latin America and in the U.S. The U.S. pressured him to resign. Ruben Esquivel.
Batista flees the country, and Fidel marches into Havana and takes over. So we're all euphoric. This is what we have all been dreaming for our country. We were a low middle class family. My mother was a seamstress, made dresses at home, and my father worked with his brother in a bodega, or a corner grocery store. So for us, the revolution was a bright future, meant real freedom, opportunity to vote legally, and just a breath of fresh air.
But gradually, the promises of the revolution were betrayed.
A lot of people were executed, but those were the Batista supporters, and everybody nodded their head and said, this has to happen. There's retribution going on, but this has to happen to settle this. Gradually, known communists are beginning to take leadership positions within the revolutionary government. In a democracy, the answer was, in a democracy, all thoughts need to be allowed, and communism is one that is going to be allowed. We accepted expropriation of property. Those that embezzled during the Batista regime, it was appropriate, we felt, to have those properties returned back to the state or to the proper owners. As time went by, the promises of elections, we didn't see any signs that that was happening. The expropriation of properties didn't stop with the Batista supporters or with the foreign companies. Property owners, that included anyone that made a living pushing a cart down the streets of Havana and made a living selling fruits. The day that law was passed, that cart belonged to the state.
Gradually, the promises of the revolution were betrayed. For relief, Cubans began looking 90 miles north to America. The U.S. government watched Castro foment anti-American sentiment across the Caribbean. He welcomed communists into his government and collectivized the economy. Meanwhile, the CIA planned to oust Castro by covert means, culminating in the Bay of Pigs invasion on April 15, 1961. On that day, aircraft flown from Nicaragua by anti-Castro Cuban pilots bombed three Castro airfields that alerted the government that an invasion was imminent. At the United Nations, Castro accused the U.S. of fomenting the attack. Fearing discovery of the U.S. connection, President John F. Kennedy canceled further air support. But American plans to sponsor an invasion went forward. 1,400 Cuban exiles launched landing craft and headed for the Bay of Pigs. The landings were immediately discovered, and Cuban aircraft fired on the invaders, sinking much of their ammunition and equipment. Cuban forces swarmed in with heavy tanks. With no air support, the invaders were doomed. On April 18th, they surrendered, with 100 men lost and nearly 400 wounded. This tragic failure caused Ruben and Elena's families to take action.
Our family decides that we need to get out because Bay of Pigs could have been the turning point, and it didn't happen, and that we would leave the country, hopefully for a short period of time, when democracy would return and we could go back. And we were exploring every possible means of leaving the country, which was not easy or simple. My sister was 11 years old at the time, I was 18, and the pastor of our church said there are going to be 2 seats 2 weeks from now. So we were able to fly out late October of 1961 to Jamaica. When we are on that flight, taking off from the airport in Havana, I realize that I'm not only the brother now, the older brother, but I'm also now the father.
Elena, who would later become Ruben's wife, had been able to escape Havana a few days earlier. She was 15.
I had never been on a plane. I had never been away from my family. I didn't know anybody.
We were allowed to take one suitcase each. So the bigger the suitcase we could find, the more clothes we could put in those suitcases.
Feelings of isolation and deprivation began to sink in.
Probably the only time in my life that I have felt completely alone. The word exile, to me, materialized on that night.
The most valuable thing we had in our minds and in our hearts. In our minds, we have all of the things we learned growing up. My mother always insisted that I learn English, which I thought, why do I need English in Cuba? We speak Spanish here. But she always said, too, you never know when that will be of help. So I had that with me. I also had faith in my heart that we would see each other again, that this separation was going to be only temporary.
The escapees were called gusanos, or worms, because their belongings were packed in duffel bags, which looked like fat worms.
And not only you weren't liked, your family that you left behind were ostracized. So any of the neighbors that were sympathetic to the communist government would ostracize their family.
Eventually, the children, the gusanos, and their parents were reunited in New Jersey. There they were worms no more. They were immigrants. Ruben's younger sister enrolled in school, as did Elena, who was not yet his wife.
My sister and I, we went to live with friends of the family. They lived in a small apartment, but they made room for us. It was a couple and the father with 2 children. The father worked at a company in New Jersey. He had been an electrical engineer in Cuba, and he was working in this company that manufactured electrical testing equipment, and he said, you should check in and apply and see if they have a job for you. I had a business background in accounting, and in those days you studied shorthand and typing, and I may apply for an office job, which I did, but they said, your English is not as good as you think, but we have a job on the assembly line if you want to take it, and I jumped at it. Minimum wage, I think at the time it was $1.20 an hour. I figured I need to go to college and I need to do it in a way where I can still work full-time, which I have to, but get a degree. I checked into a college in Newark, close to where I was working and living, and they had a program for electrical engineering that would take the full-time 4 years or 4.5 years, part-time 9 years. And I decided if they accept me, I will enroll, and if it takes me 9 years, that's okay. I don't have any other choice.
So began nearly a decade of working and learning.
We started out probably 6:30 in the morning. I would get a ride to work and go to the assembly line. The opportunities came along. For example, as I was on the assembly line, an opening occurred in inspection or quality control. Mm-hmm. So I applied for that job and I got it. It was a promotion. Then that led to inventory control. Inventory control to accounting or bookkeeping clerk, and bookkeeping clerk to bookkeeper to accountant to manager of accounting.
Reuben was well-liked. His ambition got noticed by the company president.
Maybe I'm bragging as the wife, but eventually he did become president of this company.
The president really took an interest in my career, and even though the company did not have a formal reimbursement plan for tuition, at one point he said, "Reuben, we want to reimburse you for your college education."
He befriended us. The president of the company drove me to our wedding, picked me up, and drove me to the church.
He came as our witness to our citizenship examination.
Right.
He and his wife, because somebody has to come and vouch that you have lived in this country for at least 5 years. He had known me for 5 years. There is goodness in America. There has been goodness in America from our first encounter with Americans in Cuba that came to give their time. So as students in a neighborhood school, we would learn English.
In little more than 10 years, Reuben rose from the assembly line to the president's office. In 1973, he moved the company to Dallas. He and Elena have been here ever since. They've been married for 56 years.
I did finish my undergraduate, and I major in education in Spanish. And so I went and I taught for a couple of years. We have two children, wonderful kids. David is 51 now, but David is an attorney and lives in Nashville, Tennessee. And he has three children, 20, 17, and 15, two boys and a girl. Our daughter Ileana is a PA, physician assistant, and she lives in Portland, Oregon. And she's married also and has two girls, Sophia 13 and Grace 10. I start looking at college catalogs, and I see this course in North Texas, and I audit some courses because I always liked school and reading and sort. Ended up enrolling in graduate school at the age of 49 to get my master's degree in education counseling. So I'm a licensed professional counselor for the last 20 years.
We've been here now since 1973. I'm no longer with the company. I retired after we sold the business. I'm now at UT Southwestern Medical Center, doing what I was doing for the day that we got to Dallas, and that is to do community service, civic involvement, helping not-for-profits.
That meant running for his local school board and serving two terms, all part, Reuben says, of being a citizen.
What I value in America are the Americans, because the Americans rise above politics. And I'm talking about Americans in general, not necessarily the political leaders or the self-appointed leaders or those that claim they speak on behalf of immigrants or anyone else. I like Americans because they respond to needs, live through that, how Americans responded to our time of need, for Alina, myself, and our family. I admire Americans because sometimes it takes the 11th hour to do something, but it reacts. I admire it because every 4 years, I get to cast a ballot. And some people say, well, my vote doesn't count. Your vote counts. And even the fact that we have that opportunity to vote, to me, is invaluable, that so many in so many other countries, and I can attest to that for Cubans, they would give anything for that opportunity. I think the American dream is still alive. I think the American dream is achievable. I think it could be a combination of your own efforts and the efforts of others, whether it be individuals that help facilitate your access and help you overcome barriers, or institutions that are there with that same purpose to help you achieve to the maximum of your capabilities.
You've been listening to When I Got Here, Untold Immigrant Stories, a production of Literacy Achieves, where we provide free English literacy programs for immigrant and refugee families in Dallas. If you have an immigrant story you'd like to contribute, visit our website, literacyachieves.org, to learn how you can join our efforts.